an electrode project, and they came with a reporter, because they'd seen the press release, a reporter, a photographer, and they spent a lot of time interviewing her. And then the article never came. So I approached the reporter and asked him what happened, why was it not published? And then he basically said, well, there were two problems. The first thing was they had hoped that I had gotten Arts Council funding for it, so they could say it was a scandal, like with an atheist scandal, that this kind of stuff is funded. Playing the bum trumpet, that was the title they were going to use. But the other thing he said, yeah, there wasn't really a problem with it, because, of course, it was really playing the bum trumpet, that's what I thought, really freaky. But then this whole issue with the fecal incontinence technology, that was really not, that was a bit awkward. So in a way, I was very happy about it, because that was exactly the kind of thing I was trying to do, of course. Anyway, the thing with presenting out a press release that the Center for Research in Contemporary and Digital Performance at Brunel University has now registered a patent for a telematic strap-on is, of course, I expect it's going to be doing really well. And then there's, of course, obviously the artwork context. It's also still the artwork because it's in the gallery. Now, what I'm hoping from this is that it makes this freak show thing a bit more difficult, because of course if you would say, okay, we're looking at it from an engineering perspective, and it's like, yeah, well, that's like typically a freak device, right? But then it's also art, and it's actually an erotic show, so it kind of makes sense as an erotic product then, on the other hand. So in any of these frameworks, you could say that it's a freak technology, but then if you look at it from the other perspective, it starts to make more sense and less. And so that's the kind of game that we're trying to play with this. If it will ever happen, of course, still in the stars, but I have good hope, even though some professors at my university were not positive about my email in which I described the product and asked them if they had PhD students that might be interested to collaborate on this patent, because it would be very good for the CV. So that's all I wanted to say. This is it's not even complete, it's blah, blah, it's so academic. Huh? Anyway, thank you.
So, maybe two or three questions for Dani before we take the dinner break.
Okay, first a comment and a really basic question. So it was a really cool performance, and I have to say, I hope your next project makes it, because that would be the best patent troll ever.
No, there's even better one in France. A guy who patented a full bodysuit that prevents all STDs. So it lists as a patent, it's amazing. Anyway, but
it's just very simple. Your first was you had a performance with a woman and a pig. What was going on there? I was just curious.
Okay,
that
is a performance by Kira O'Reilly as part of an exhibition called Skinterfaces, where a number of artists were invited to deal with the idea of species, skin, whatever, in the age of biomodification. So basically, what see that here is not sophisticated in a technological sense, but it's very interesting. She got this dead pig in that exhibition and did a performance with this in which she really was interested in her skin touching the skin of the dead animal. In the context of that exhibition, of course, it's rather interesting because there were no living animals and things there as well. There was other stuff, for example, an exhibit called Victimless Leather, where people had grown really small, for technical purposes, had grown really small leather jackets, but without anything dying. They had grown it from stem cells. So in that context, she kind of took the commodified animal from a slaughterhouse and did a live performance with that. So
very cool. Thank you. It was a cool performance.
Thank you.
That was fantastic. Thank you. You talked at the beginning about magazine bodies, and the fact that like what is portrayed, what gets the most attention is what is told, what we're told is the most conventionally attractive. Is there a self-selection problem in that, you know, people with unconventional bodies or don't see themselves in this space and therefore don't go into it, or is it a media selection problem where the media doesn't cover it because, you know, because non-traditional bodies are already freaks, so there's no point.
Well, if you look at performance art, of course there are performance artists who don't have these bodies. Franco B, for example, is really quite obese. I mean, I've not looked into the quantities of this, but I think the fact that Abramovich especially is now such a star in the media and so celebrated, and you see that with a lot of artists, is also, I really think, because it is transgressive, but a lot of it also is kind of reassuring. It's really a bit as, okay, yeah, she does these performances, but, you know, she's really sophisticated, and don't worry, she won't really do anything. And that's also really how it now, I mean, not to cause any confusion here, Franco B got really angry with me because he thought I was only trying to say that Marina Abramovich is really bad and it's all crap work, but that's not at all the case. I mean, I think it's fantastic work these people have done and are doing, but I think it's also an interesting aspect there which I think must be addressed. And I think that there is something like that, but it's of course not that all performance artists have these bodies, but there are, I think, it's not at par with if you go out on the streets. A lot of performance artists are narcissistic, and I think that's okay, but they have to address it. Orlan does it. Orlan says, look, I am a narcissist, and she also says, I don't see what the problem with that is, because it's taboo, right? When artists say I'm a narcissist, it's bad. Because he said, well, Michael Jackson is a narcissist, and nobody is suspicious about that. That's just fine. But if an artist is it, but they are all really narcissistic, so...
Michael Jackson's dead.
Yeah, he is now. But when she said that, it was in 2009. But maybe he still is narcissistic. We don't know.
So much is like evaporating to global consciousness, I guess. we at Monochrome are currently working on a project or setup, and we call it like a reference to Abramovich. We call it the artist's preset. and I'm not telling you more about that.
Are you applying for a patent?
Okay. So I think it's interesting the notion of sort of magazine bodies and you're sort of looking at either performance artists or at least a particular set of performance artists as analogous in a sense to circus freaks. But what's really interesting is perhaps, I don't know, sort of thinking about what Johannes says sometimes about like beginning as actionists and the trouble today of getting kind of pegged into this space as a court jester, is that as well as sort of the really interesting kind of inverted, double inverted, twisted all around performance of yet subversion of masculinity that was definitely there in your piece. My question is if performance artists might better be conceived of as trolls.
Yes, I think you could say that as well. I mean, I'm not saying that this is the one truth. Why not? I mean, of course, the issue with this is really, if we're really into what Johannes talked about the day before ours started, not all of you were there, I think, but this problem of when you do this project with the blood sausage, where people use their own blood to make sausage, it's all really great, but nowadays nobody cares anymore. It doesn't go in the paper. It doesn't get right publicity. The problem, of course, is, and that's kind of the example of The Sun, and I had quite a correspondence with his journalist, it has to be a freak show, and if it isn't, it's not going to be in the paper. So, of course, I can say, like, oh, maybe this performance I did here was kind of worked or whatever, but there is no, I think it is really, trolling is the only possibility here. If you really think about what impact, and I don't know really, that's kind of a...
And the trolling only works, that was kind of like my point, if I put it in trolling terms, the trolling only works if the chat room, or like it only works in the context of something, like I mean, I can troll whatever I like, if there's no audience receptive to the troll, doesn't work.
No, and of course, and that's of course the issue. Like the thing I hit with here, Electrode affords different sorts of trolling in different contexts, right? As I said, if I go to a new music or an electronic music event with this, it upsets people because I'm kind of taking the piss of their really fancy technologies and their really stubborn denial of the fact that there is not only the sound. but then of course in different contexts it works differently. On the other, you know, what can I say? I mean, that's the same with this work, right? So in some contexts it will work as a freak show, in some it won't. But actually, the kind of point I was trying to make as well, and I didn't elaborate on that a lot here, is but that because of this blurring of the media boundaries, this perception of this work as a freak show, I think it has also changed for the in crowd, because even the in crowd is exposed to all the other media. I'm sure that if you would go to a performance art event in the 60s, that this is much more clearly demarcated as, okay, we're now we're going to freak a performance event. I mean, this event might be a good example of this as well, because it's very mixed, right? I mean, I did a performance here, but this is not only performance art in crowd, as you know, not everybody knows Marina Abramovic, which is probably very refreshing. It's very good.
My favorite joke ever is, how many performance artists does it take to screw in a light bulb? I don't know, I left. And I put this off myself, but it's so true.
Yeah, but I think.
Yesterday.
Yeah, of course, but I think that's excellent because it's boring. I find it really boring as well, but that's part of the point of the thing, right? That the orgasm as this kind of ultimately replicated, technologized, quantified orgasm, which is made into the ultimate boredom. So, yeah, I like it when people leave. I would leave. Especially if I would be in a venue where there's only water for sale.
I think I have to update the joke. How many performance artists does it take to screw a light bulb?
Yeah, we can think about that.
Sorry about that. Any more questions for Danny Plüger, who came to us from the UK?
From the UK, and I came for you, but only fake.
Okay. Any more questions? If not, then a big applause.
I was just really curious. I couldn't quite figure out the electronic sound, what it was aligned to.
Ah, okay. Well, that is a very specific kind of in thing as well. The sound algorithm that makes the sound, that is one of the most famous archetypical electronic music developments from the 70s to the 90s by the French Greek composer Yannis Xenakis, because it was the first algorithm, so computer process, that made a sound that was not based on the idea of trying to model what an analog instrument such as an oscillograph or whatever would do. So it's a specific computer music process. What I was interested in, the reason why I used it, is to have this really archetypical, oh, this is electronic music, and then this thing juxtaposed with doing it with the anus. Now, so what this program does, when I change the tension of my sphincter muscle, it controls a certain parameter of this algorithm. So for example, what the algorithm does has it varies everything, the loudness and the pitch, so how high and how low the sound is, continuously, but you set the boundaries for that. And how fast it goes. So you can say, you can change the amplitude, so the loudness of the sound, from 0 to 100% all the time, but you can't go more than 5% per second. And then another, and then you can say if my sphincter muscle gets more tense, then it can vary faster per second. And there were different variations of this. So there were seven different things that would happen. So every time I repeated the pattern, the sphincter muscle would control a different parameter of the sound. So also if I wouldn't do something, the sound would still change, but the boundaries of the algorithm would not change. They would stay the same. So, you know, so for example, and then if I would tend, it would go, right? So I hope that I find it difficult to explain stuff like this because it's really in the realms of deep nerdism, of course. But I hope that made some sense.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks, Daniel.